Well, for years, for it was essentially time immemorial, there's been discussion about how do you prevent situations where companies are involved in multiple facets of the same program where they might actually have access to information they shouldn't have or undue influence over decisions that actually affect other business they're doing. So it's the concept in IT, for instance, if you remember a few years ago with Karen Evans, and they started doing business case analyses, and could you do the business case analysis that would justify an IT investment and then also compete to do the actual IT program itself? Is that a conflict of interest, and
right.
how do you manage that? And then the Defense Department and the weapon systems world, you have a whole environment of companies that are called CETA contractors, which really do engineering support. They often have fairly significant roles in programs where they're actually supporting directly the military office as opposed to the prime contractor, and what are the relationships they might otherwise have that could create conflicts of interest. It's been an issue, been around for a long time. There was a series of GAO findings and protests and so forth suggesting that the department was not adequately applying conflict of interest rules to prevent undue conflicts from emerging. And so concern had been spiraling up over time around this issue. Although there had been precious few significant cases where a conflict actually emerged that something untoward was done, the sensitivity was heightening. And finally, about a year and a half ago, when Congress passed what's called the Weapon Systems Acquisition Reform Act, maybe it was even less than a year ago, they included language directing DOD to develop new regulations around organizational conflicts of interest.
And this has been fairly closely watched because, I mean, a number of companies even sold off parts of their organization out of concern about these regulations.
Well, not just the regulations, already the practices in
right.
certain departments, the NRO and Missile Defense Agency and others were putting some fairly tough conflict of interest requirements in that were forcing some companies to make some decisions about what they were going to do and where they were going to focus their business. Clearly, Northrop's sale of TASC was tied to concerns that TASC and its unique role in the marketplace could present conflicts for Northrop and the things Northrop wants to do as a company and so on. So yes, companies were already beginning to respond, and the concern had always been if the department went way too far, you could actually be inadvertently or advertently creating an environment in which you force some restructuring in the industry. Some of it may be defensible and some of it probably unnecessary. So those unintended consequences started becoming an issue. And then the other big question, there were two other big questions. One is this is not a new issue, and traditionally these potential conflicts are dealt with through what are called mitigation strategies. In other words, you can create separation between divisions, you can treat separation and communications limitations between people, what they call firewalls and so forth, to prevent the inappropriate transfer of information and so on. So the question is, number one, is mitigation a viable option? Can it work? Does it work? If so, how do we make it work better if it's not working well? And then the second piece was not just the sensitivity was growing not just around weapon systems, but around large IT programs and other large programmatic initiatives at DOD and elsewhere in government. So this is intended to be covering more than just weapon systems and ultimately will have a government-wide impact. OMB will develop by direction. They will be coming out with government-wide rules on OCI, organizational conflict of interest, sometime this year. So this is a staged process, not a new issue, one of significant importance, both to the government and to industry.
And so on December 30th, which is exactly when everyone's paying attention to these things, the final rule came out, and it's somewhat different from how it scaled back a little bit from my reading of it.
Yeah, how sick was it that we were here watching it on December 30th? But what they did, I thought was actually pretty good. The initial rule came out, and there were a number of concerns, and the concerns were cross-cutting across industry. I mean, there are different views in industry about this issue. Some of it has to do with the nature of your company and where you sit. There has some competitive implications and so forth. But there was a consensus, I think, in industry that there were significant problems with the proposed rule. One of them was it created such a complex web of process requirements that you'd never get there. And so the answer would always be no. And that could actually deny the department access to capabilities it wants. It could create unnecessary barriers for competitive barriers for companies and so forth beyond what's necessary to protect the government's best interests. Another thing the proposed rule did was it applied the same rule and the same regime to all procurements at DOD, whether you're in IT, whether you're in logistics, whether you're in weapon systems or whatever. We felt strongly that there are dramatic differences between the weapon systems marketplace, which is a limited closed market, and the broad IT space is the best example I could use, which is a large, competitive, commercially driven marketplace. Thousands of players built on business models and so forth that are very commercial in nature. And that therefore the same rules, A, shouldn't apply and probably can't work effectively in both markets. So there was a set of issues, and DOD, as you said, on the 30th came out with the final rule, and what they've done is they've limited its application only to weapon systems related work, which was what the law actually told them to do. The expansion beyond that was DOD's choice. So they've limited the application, and they provided a substantial amount of clarity and focus in the rule that I think makes it much more executable. It's not perfect, but I think that what they've done is a lot more sensible, and it really meets what Ash Carter, the Undersecretary of Defense, said he wanted to achieve in doing this rule, which was to have a rule of reason as opposed to a sort of a rule of philosophy, if you will.
And there was a provision in there about promoting competition, essentially to make sure you're not closing off, you're not chopping off your nose to spite your face.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things that they've what they want to do is they've provided specific guidance in there that says that they should not impose across the board restrictions or limitations on the use of particular resolution methods. Those words, because what the concern is
that'll keep you up at night.
Exactly. But if you take this one size fits all across the board rigid approach, you can actually very much limit competition. And that's contrary, in a positive way, to some of the things we'd seen in various DOD organizations where they'd already started to do these across the board, what we call choose your major prohibitions. And so I think consistent with Dr. Carter's initiatives and his focus, they want to make this logical. They want to make it case by case with guidance and parameters, but look at each case, consider competition and a number of things, and not just assume that we can cookie cutter this. So that in that level, on that level, I think they've done some very helpful stuff here.
As you said, it's widely believed that the FAR Council is looking at an OCI rule for civilian agencies. Would this be a pretty good model for them to use?
Well, I think it'll be very interesting. It's going to be a very interesting dialogue as they go through the public comment process, because, of course, once you get out of DOD and you out of that very unique weapon systems environment,
right.
Remember, you're not talking about a traditionally commercial competitive. I mean, it's competitive in its own way, but you have a monopsony buyer and so forth. And you move into what the civilian agencies or others in DOD who are not buying weapon systems deal with, and I think IT is really the big piece here. How do you manage this in an environment where the standard in the industry is through various kinds of channel partnerships and joint ventures and teaming? I mean, it's a different kind of model. It's also a design build model, if you will, very much in the commercial sense, where very often commercially you will bring in one company to do both design and then implement a solution. How do you manage those pieces? So there's a lot of differences between the sort of the hardware weapon systems environment and the rest of what the government buys. And I think it's going to be a very interesting discussion as to how you create a model, whether this is the right one or modified or even very different, that protects the government's interests, because no one is suggesting that we ought to just blithely accept conflicts. But at the same time,
and there were circumstances where there were people judging it didn't pass a smell test, so to speak.
There were several protests that indicated that the conflict of interest rules were potentially not being appropriately managed by the government, and it led some at GAO to conclude that there needed to be significant changes. Although I think even some of that thinking, as reflected in this DOD rule, has changed, that we need changes, but we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But as you move outside of that weapon systems environment and you move into a very different kind of marketplace, how you marry up the government's legitimate concern and need to manage and protect against conflict and its ability to access the best capabilities in a broad marketplace becomes a bit different. And that's, I think, going to be a very interesting discussion.
So what are you going to be watching for as this, it's now a rule, so how implementation is always another matter. What are you going to be watching for as this actually gets implemented?
Well, I think the biggest thing within DOD right now is to, and I think DOD has acknowledged this, that it's not only just a training exercise, but it's an orientation and thinking exercise across the department, because you do have various components within DOD that have already begun over the last several years to impose, in some cases, what seem to be very, very harsh and unnecessarily harsh rules, but have developed sort of internal policy, either informally or formally, to govern this. And I think that Dr. Carter Carter and Dr. Kendall, who's his principal deputy, have talked about the need now to really get into the system and make sure people understand kind of what they're trying to get at, and then how do you actually implement it, rather than allowing them to say, oh, yeah, that's an interesting policy, but I'm going to do it my way because it's not technically in violation, if you will. And that's a hard challenge because the system had already begun to respond to some of the outside pressures long before the regulatory process caught up.